radio program, a collaboration between 89.5 FM Bush Radio, Cape Town, South Africa, and 88.7 FM WRHU Radio, Hofstra University in Hempstead, New York. Broadcasting from the Bush Radio Salt River Studios in Cape Town is host me, Lydia Makhwanana. Broadcasting from WRHU Studios in Hempstead, New York, are your hosts Cody Millar and Andy Gladding. We welcome you to join us for the next hour as we celebrate the power of community radio, music, language, and culture. The world is a big place, but using the power of radio, we're bringing it right to your door. Now Bush Radio and WRHU welcome you to the one world of community radio.
Say I owe 40. Damn. Midweek, I radio over 40. Hours, depression showers, feeling like, I'm E40. 21 days to form a habit, broken six. Problem is, these counterfeits like where you is. On the bottom, oh my God, I'm trust a kid like men with limp wrists. I know these niggas gon' switch. This your wake-up call, you overslept again. Feeling trapped, bow tie on a double chin. Attitude is crap, you'll feel you'll never win. Off that, run it back and do it all again. Work in progress, but no promises. Even though my mindset aligns with all the derogatives, it's hard to be a good person when the world's hurting. Far from my first version, I'ma keep working, elevate.
Spaceship and take a flight, escape the shoes with them old ass school middle rules. Only fool with Mars, I'm cool with young crew, chopping like kung fu, the tongue is a gun, my mind spraying late, strategy like Sun Tzu, people respect power, so I become it. Ever since a child I want it, about 100,000 pounds of hundreds, life of poverty gotta be obsolete, of modesty I'ma be Black Bezos' prophecy, been shedding tears, I'm determined to turn this fear into money concerns, appear in the sun sipping German beers, get rich or die trying, my eyes been on that prize since I was 5, and since 9, I've been climbing, so watch me elevate and escape through state of bliss from slave wages, it's time to rage against this machine. By any means,
seems like a sunny day.
Yeah. 88.7 WRHU Hempstead, Radio Hofstra University, 89.5 Bush Radio, Cape Town, South Africa, 88.3 WRCT Pittsburgh, Radio Carnegie Tech. You're listening to the One World Radio Show. I'm your host, Cody Millar. Joined with me is Ricky Huber out of New York. And we're joined by lead of We Are Band Nerds, Brandon Cross. Brandon, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Brandon, where are you broadcasting from right now? Cody's in Philly. I'm in New York. Where are you?
Broadcasting live from Dallas, Texas.
Dallas, Texas, the epicenter of We Are Band Nerds.
Yes, pretty much. D-Town, what's going on, everybody?
What's going on? I love it. So let's get to the million-dollar question. What is We Are Band Nerds?
Oh, that's a million-dollar question? Okay. We Are Band Nerds. We are a six-piece new metal collective. Yeah, we've been rocking for like 10 years, but we like to consider ourselves the blue-collar working man's band, you know? So a lot of our content is, you know, based off of, you know, just your regular 9-to-5 person. You know, you have your celebrities and stuff like that, but then what about the regular 9-to-5 person that has dreams and aspirations just as well, you know? So that's what We Are Band Nerds is about. Pro-life, we're about positivity. We speak on depression and, you know, the things that we want in life and want to achieve and the obstacles that get in the way, and speak a lot on mental health, but we always encourage, you know, to keep pushing. So that is We Are Band Nerds in a nutshell.
Now, you and your other bandmates all kind of come from a musical background. Is that right? What kind of got you into music?
What brought me into music? I come from a musical family. I had older cousins that were in band and stuff, and they just made it look so cool, you know, growing up. And so I just kind of followed suit and picked the instrument and, you know, got involved with music early. You know, my first instrument, I was in third grade. I started playing the drums. And then once I moved to fourth and fifth grade, I started playing the trumpet, and all through high school, I played the trumpet and marching band and stuff like that. And so I met the other members, so to speak. Band Nerds really became a thing when I got to college. By then, I was already making like beats and stuff like that. It started as like a production company, so it was just a bunch of beats and, you know, songs getting written, but like, I didn't consider myself an artist. So I met Tony Lucas. He's the other front man of We Are Band Nerds. And, you know, we were working together at this electric company called Encore. And he was like my trainer. And so we just vibed and, you know, we started rapping and freestyling together. And, you know, and he told me he made music and beats and stuff. And so we just started collabing, and it became a, you know, kind of like a partnership. And one of my school projects while I was in college was they wanted us to showcase, you know, what we've been working on. I went to this music school, Media Tech. It was like an audio engineering school or whatnot. And so one of the final projects, you have to show what you've been working on. So we put together a band, and that was like the first thing of Band Nerds. You know, it was just to showcase our music that we've been working on. And it was kind of like the roots. There was no rock, you know, aesthetic to it at first, and we liked how it sounded. It went really well. We did well. I got a great grade, so to speak. And then me and him just started talking and was like, we should actually make this a thing, like make a band. And so that's how it began.
And so it started just you and your friend. It started as a partnership that way?
Yeah, it started as we were just making beats. We had no intention of being artists, so to speak. It just evolved.
So how does that evolve? Because we all, especially because we've all done things with projects and stuff, especially us, people like Cody, myself, who went to school for communications, you start with a class project or something, you do a story or something, make a little short film, and then you go, oh, there might be something here, and you try to grow it. And I see people have like different partnerships. How'd you guys grow it and evolve from that making beats and that school project to what it is today?
Oh, good question. I would have to say it was several ingredients that had to come into play that really helped us. But I would have to say both of our passions for music and then consistency of constantly being around each other. Because like I said, he was my trainer at my job. So like I saw him every day. We were hanging out pretty much every day, except instead of talking about work, we were talking about music and, you know, and how we could make it better and just being consistent. When you're with someone that shares the same passion as you, you know, and over time just being consistent, you're going to come up with a whole bunch of, you know, things. And so that's how it just grew. Like our working relationship stemmed into and blossomed into this musical relationship that we've had. You know, I mean, he's been one of my closest friends for well over a decade now, you know, so that's how it just grew. And it's just, it keeps growing, it keeps evolving. We're always trying to make this thing better each day. So consistency, time, and passion. You got to have passion for it.
Definitely. Where do you feel like are your biggest inspirations when it comes to your craft and your music? And how might that differ or be similar for yourself versus for the band?
Okay. Really good question. I mean, I'm not one to like to answer for other members, but from my perspective, Tony, he comes from a hip hop background. You know what I mean? Really, you know, knowledgeable in like hip hop and all the aesthetics and all the deep cuts. And he's a big fan of record shopping and sample shopping and stuff like that. Him and our DJ Los, they're like music historians, especially in the hip hop department. Me personally, I grew up on jazz. My family is jazz heads and stuff like that. I mean, my son's name is Coltrane. You know, like I'm a big jazz head. So my influence comes from like Coltrane, stuff like that. Charlie Parker, Freddie Hubbard, like jazz greats and stuff like that. Obviously Miles Davis. And then as I grew up and got older, you know, I started diving into other realms of music. And, you know, that's when I got into, like, Rage Against the Machine, Korn, Deftones, one of my favorite bands. Obviously, Linkin Park, Limp Bizkit, you know, when that wave was going on, I was really heavy into that. One of my favorite rappers is Eminem. Love Jay-Z, DMX, Method Man, Redman. I have hip-hop influence as well. Outkast, one of my favorite groups. They're very influential. And then producers, because I started as a producer. One of my favorite producers is Pharrell and the Neptunes. Like, I loved their sound when they came out. It was very, very influential in how I made music and approach music. So out of all my influences that I just gave, I would say the Neptunes is probably my biggest influence in I do music and stuff like that as well. Shout out to Timberland, Just Blaze, Swiss Beats. These are all, you know, legendary producers that I've listened to and studied their music. Jermaine Dupri, et cetera. I could go on and on, you know?
Yeah, I feel like the core of all music that we listen to and consume nowadays is really shaped by these influential producers who I feel like don't always get their flowers, because what's always thought of is like, who is actually the singer or who we're hearing. But yet, as soon as you hear those four beats of, you know, it's a Pharrell track, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Very influential to me.
Now, you're the lead singer of We Are Bannards, but you're also the music producer. So how do you kind of walk the line between those two roles as you're going through the creative process?
I'm the lead singer and the music producer. I'm one of the music producers. Tony and I, we both, you know, share the duties and our production and stuff. Like, some days I'm going to only come you know, with like 20%, and I need him to show up with the other 80, you know what I mean? So it's a give and take. That's what we've been able to evolve this relationship. Like, I'm not going to have my best ideas all the time. So, you know, sometimes I lean on him to come up with something, and then we work from that. So I have to give Tony just as much credit as, you know, in the producing department as myself as well. So, but it is helpful that two of us work on the music rather than, you know, your usual or usually in a band, like, everybody's responsible for their instrument, so to speak. So, like, a guitar player will probably come up with the guitar riffs, you know, drummers will probably come up with the drum beats, bass, et cetera, et cetera. Usually in most bands. But in our band, like, we write the music and we write the lyrics, everything. So it's we're able to be more consistent. We're able to dial in a sound easier, because it's only two minds rather than six. It's hard with two. So trying to get six brains working together on, you know, one song, that's hell. So it's easier for us two to work together and things like that. And, like, I'm able to put into perspective, okay, if we do this, I'm going to have to make sure that I do this. That means the guitar player is going to have to do this, da, 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 da. So we're thinking and mapping all this stuff out as we're creating, so to speak. You know, you have to make sure you keep those things in line. Like, you can make a little cool lick, but is that going to sound good live? Is that going to sound good if we do it like this? Da, 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 da. So these are all things that you have to just keep in mind when, you know, when we're in there creating. I just have another role. Like, that sounds cool, but are you going to be able to sing that? Are you going to be able to do that? These are things that, you know, just have to keep in mind when we're creating. But that's just the advantage of being the one that is creating. I can create for my instrument rather than rely on someone else to do something for me, for my instrument, if that made any sense.
Definitely. Speaking of live performance, do you have many live performances or concerts recently?
Well, recently we just came off of a year-long hiatus. We were going strong for probably a good 8-9 years, no breaks, just, you know, trying to get out there, you know, working on music, this and the third. And last year was the first time we took a break ever in our career. So we are just now coming off of like a year hiatus. So we're all refreshed and ready to go get back into it. And so we've set up, you know, we have some shows, like some warm-up shows that we've set up. I know we have October 11th. We have the 25th. We have Austin, San Antonio. Like, we have some shows lined up coming up this month and the month after that, just to, like, warm-up shows. And then next year we really plan on hitting ground running hard, like touring and stuff like that, really, you know, traveling and just really getting back into it. But right now we only have maybe like 4 or 5 shows set up right now, just to get back into the swing of things. So shout out to the Monarch in New York. We're trying to work on something to get back out to New York. We were in Harlem a year ago. We did our last show in New York. It was in Harlem. So, and that was really fun. We had a great time as well. So we're trying to get back to New York as well. So yeah, just be on the lookout for banners, you know what I mean? Like, come to our page. We go live every night, you know, come to our page and tell us where you want us to go perform. We're looking for places. We've had places like Mexico, Oklahoma, Arizona, trying to get overseas as well. We're getting hit up in our inbox. So yeah, hit us up so we can work something out. You know, we want to go play everywhere.
We'll definitely have to get you out here in Pittsburgh. We got a pretty vibrant DIY scene and definitely an appetite for new metal.
Work. in Pittsburgh? Who would have thought?
Surprisingly a lot. I mean, if you just think about it, we're, what, an hour and a half away from Cleveland? So we kind of get that Ohio influence too, bit of the Midwest grunge, all that.
That's something that I loved about living up north. That was one of the main things. It's like being in Texas, like you go 9-10 hours one direction and you're still in Texas. You know what I mean? Up north in Pennsylvania, you go 2 hours one way, you're in another state. An hour and a half this way, you're in another state. You know what I'm saying? So like, I just appreciate that you could hit more places, Baltimore, all those places, Virginia, New York, Philly, you know, all these places you can hit up easier. Texas, we are just prone to Texas. It's like a day thing to get out of Texas. So it's so big, you know what I mean? So we're just looking forward to getting out of Texas and hitting more spots, get people familiar with Banners.
You were talking about the different places you've gone and different places you played. What have different audience responses been to We Are Band Nerds, depending on the location that you play, with in terms of the songs and the messaging, which we'll get into more later. But what has the audience reaction been like? How's it different?
Shock and awe, I guess. You know, I'd be lying if I said we didn't play on the juxtaposition that we have. You have a band back in Mexicans. And, you know, when you see us upon first glance, you're like, well, I wonder what they're going to do. We all come from, you know, the hood environment, so to speak, the poor disenfranchised, so to speak. So we have a certain aesthetic about us that does not match the style of music that we do. So when we are setting up and stuff like that, it's a bit of curiosity. You know, you're going to look and be like, I wonder what they're going to do. I need to at least hear what they're going to do, you know. And usually, probably 8 times out of 10, you know, you're probably going to leave with some type of merch or some type of link to follow us or something after we're done performing. It's usually what happens. It's like, I never heard of y'all, never knew this was something that was going on. You guys are awesome. Our live shows, you know, our recorded music doesn't do our live shows justice.
And something you were saying about with live versus pre-recorded. In fact, I was watching something last night where they're talking about how the star of the real music making process is the audio engineer, the producer, kind of as we were touching on before, because of how they could make things sound in a studio. How do you kind of use that whole process of creating something in the studio versus doing it live in terms of the notes and what you can hit? How do you make that work?
Yeah, that goes back to the production part that we were talking about earlier. Like, we're not going to finish a song if it's not going to sound good live. Like, that's one of the requirements that we take into consideration when we're making music. So, like, if it's not going to sound, if it's not going to translate live, we scrap it. So, like, all the songs that we do, we make sure that, okay, it sounds good here on the recording, but for some reason it's missing a luster or something when we do it live, you know what I mean? So, like, we have to make sure that it does sound live, good live, you know, because that is very important, the live aspect. The drum fills, stuff like that, like, we're very free when it comes to the live performance. We're not really big on playing it as is, like you hear it on the record. You know what I mean? Like, so there'll be some certain elements that might be just a little bit different. Like, I might sing it just a tad bit different. You know what I mean? In different parts, you know, just to give a different feel from live to, you know, recorded and vice versa, you know? So, yeah, you can expect a little bit different feel and it to sound just a tad bit different live. But we do that on purpose.
And something else, Brandon, that I just find interesting is that you were saying when you come out on stage, the audience doesn't necessarily know what to expect. How do you kind of use that? Because you see all the time people, it's like stuff that goes viral on YouTube. People come out and they're like, we don't know what to expect of this band, but then they win the whole room over. How do you use that to your advantage when you take this to the stage?
Well, yeah, you have to lean into that. Like, I would be lying if I said I didn't look the part of, like, I look the part of typical, I guess, just regular rapper. You know what I mean? Just a regular hip hop artist. And so if you see Tony and I on stage, the first thought you're going to probably think is, oh, they're going to rap, you know what I mean? And it's probably going to be what you hear now, mainstream, the typical, you know. But it's like, oh, but they have guitars and there's actual instruments there, you know what I mean? So I can't tell you how many times we've been booked to places and we've shown up and they've only had two microphones and like a stereo system to play the track. Because they thought we were just rappers, you know what I mean? Like, they didn't realize we were an actual band. Like, We Are Band Nerds is not, you know, Najee and Brandon Cross. We Are Band Nerds is a collective of six of us. We Are Band Nerds is the band. And a lot of times we got that getting booked, they thought We Are Band Nerds was just the name of our group. And we were just rappers. So we would show up to a lot of places and they wouldn't be prepared for us. They wouldn't have the right equipment for us. So we've been in a lot of situations where we just don't look the part. We kind of lean into it now. You know, we know we don't look the part. And so we use that to our advantage. And it's not shock value, I guess, but it is kind of a minor shock, I guess. It's like, oh, I wasn't expecting that, but I really like it. You know, those are usually the things that we get from people. Like, oh, I didn't know that's what y'all are going to do, but like, I didn't know I needed that either, you know, kind of thing. So, what are very positive reviews.
What do you mean that I didn't know I needed that? I'm curious as what people say following that statement, because that's kind of cool that you get that response.
Yeah, so like, a lot of people are caught in bubbles. A lot of people, they find music or their new music like through the mainstream way of finding it, like your ESPs and Spotify's and Apple Music, all those. Like, that's where usually people, YouTube, that social media, this is where they're getting their music from. And if we're being honest, it's a lot of stuff is starting to run together, sound the same. There is a collective of eclectic music out there. There's different styles of music that are out there. It's just not mainstream. So a lot of people, when they come across, you know, bands like us, you know what I mean? And we're different. We don't have a mainstream sound. I wouldn't say we have a new sound or anything like that. We just have a sound that is not considered mainstream. You know, our genre, nu metal, was hot, you know, years ago, a long time ago. You know what I mean? It's just not mainstream now. And so we put a new take on that older sound. And so it kind of gives this modern, it kind of modernizes the genre, so to speak. And when people hear that, how it's a good mix of hip-hop, you know, rock, it has electronic music, like it's a good blend of all these genres together. They're like, oh, I didn't know stuff like this existed. And it's like, I really like this stuff. So there's more stuff out there besides what's, you know, on the top billboards, you know what I mean? So a lot of people will be like, oh, this is refreshing because I'm tired of hearing the same type of songs on the radio or the things that are getting promoted, all these songs that are getting promoted, they're all kind of running together, sounding alike, if we're being honest. And so when you hear something like that, it's like, oh, wow, that was really good. Wasn't expecting it. You know what I mean? Also, opening my ears up to new things. So I didn't know that, that was something that I needed. A lot of people hear our music and it pushes them to other bands that kind of are similar to ours.
Well, what's also cool about what you just said, not what's like mainstream, I was reading about you guys last night, and forgive me, I forget what the name of the song was. It was like people were commenting, and someone had put, honestly, this is better than what you hear most of the time on like mainstream media play. And it just kind of goes back to what you said. It's something different, a breath of fresh air. because what I really like about you guys is you mentioned this before we even started taping. You've been on the road for 8-9 years, been going at it really consistently, but you have to go to your job after this, your full-time job. You guys are real working people who are doing this not for fun, because you get, well, it's fun, obviously, but you get money out of it, but this isn't like your bread and butter life. So talk about that kind of lifestyle of like, don't give up your day job kind of thing. They always say that to people. You guys didn't, and you're still doing this, and you're still coming up with stuff that's really touching people. Tell everybody about how you manage all of that, because I think a lot of people admire like side hustles and things like that. Like, oh, I do this, but on the weekend I'll go and I'll sing and I'll, you know what I'm saying?
Right, right. Exactly. We're I'd like to think that I'm in a weird place. I'm in a middle, a gray area, so to speak, where it's more than a hobby, you know what I mean? But I get joy out of it. Like it is a hobby, you know what I'm saying? And yeah, you still gotta provide, you know, the whole starving artist thing, that's played out. Like nobody does that anymore. You shouldn't be doing that anymore. Just showing up to gigs and living on the road and stuff like that. That's really no way to approach your, you know, your dream. This is something that we love to do, and so we want to take care of it. And you know, putting yourself in a position where you're struggling on the road and making ends meet will turn your, you know, it can turn your dreams and all that stuff. It can turn it sour, turn it into a nightmare. So you have to protect your dreams and goals. That's just something that we as adults decided to do. Like, hey, we want to invest in this. You got to invest in your dreams and stuff like that. It doesn't happen like you see on TV or movies where it's like, oh, I saw these guys and I had to sign them, like some big record label or was in the audience one night. And not how it really works. Everybody and their mom can do music and stuff nowadays. It's so accessible. So there's a lot of, you're not only competing with the superstars, but you're also competing with people that do it as a hobby. You know what I mean? So like, because it's so accessible and you can just put your music out there, that you're not only competing with, you know, the superstars and stuff like that we know of, but like you could be competing against your neighbor and you don't even know it, you know, because it's so easy to just put stuff out there. And it's just so much material and music out there. It's like it could be frustrating and you can get depressed and all that because you feel like you're competing for people's ears and attention. And so, yeah, it can get like that, you know. That's why you have to have passion for it. At the end of the day, if I knew I wasn't going to get paid at all for any of these things that we're doing and this effort that I'm putting in, if I knew I wasn't going to get paid, would I still do it is the question. And the answer is yes. So as long as that, I keep a hold of that, like all the other stuff, I can get through that. You know, there'll be good days where it's like, I don't want to do this anymore. You know what I mean? I just want to focus on my family, you know, this, that, and third, maybe do something else. And then there's, you know, there's days where I'm like, I couldn't imagine myself doing anything else. You know what I mean? So it's just keeping that goal, keeping that dream, you know, and just watering it and taking care of it and, you know, taking it one day at a time. You know what I'm saying? Like, not everybody's journey is going to be superstars. Not everybody's going to be, you know, Beyonce status. Like, we're trying to be like middle class workers, so to speak. If we were in, if this was like a corporate world, so to speak, if you looked at the music industry like a corporate setting, you know what I mean? We are not looking to be CEOs and Fortune 500 companies and stuff like that. Like, that's not our thing. Be happy as an entry-level manager or something like that. Like, we would be good with that. There's a certain level that we're trying to hit where we'll feel like, oh, we're successful. And so if you go in it with a clear head and understand, like, not everybody's journey is the same, you'll be okay. That's how we've been able to last for so long, because to be honest, over a decade and still same members and stuff like that, like, that's hard to do. You know what I mean? Like, that's really hard to do. Bands don't really last that long. Just got to keep your head on, you know, straight, and just keep pushing every day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Authenticity is so important, and it comes across clearly through your music. And I think that's why a lot of people will gravitate towards your work as well.
Appreciate it. Appreciate it.
Okay, so we had your two albums coming out in 2018, 2019. You had your single come out in 2023. Curious, what's the next, what are you working on currently on music?
We're currently working on our second official album. You know, like I said, we've been putting projects out for years. Forget Me Not is our first official collective thought with the sound that we were going for, and so currently working on another album right now as we gear up to come back. So 2026, we're hoping to release our newest project that we're working on. ASMR is the working title that we're going for, a short mental reboot, so be on the lookout for that. But yeah, we're really excited. Just putting music out and just being active again.
And something else, because you said a mental reboot. We were talking about this earlier, yeah. And you touched on, we were talking about the music that you kind of write and who you do it for. You're middle class people, and you write songs for middle class people. And the topics that you touch on, like depression, the working class, poverty, different stuff like that, relationship.
Yeah.
Do you feel that? What's your process behind putting out these messages in your music? And do you feel that, because I would certainly feel that your middle class backgrounds definitely play a role in being able to translate this more successfully than someone who might be at Beyonce level might be able to. And that's what speaks to people.
Yeah. I mean, you gotta write about what you know. Yeah. It's just we like to use the term middle class. We say that, but blue collar, we're blue collar, we write music for the people that look like us, the fathers, the people with families, the people that have to get up in the morning, go do 9-to-5 jobs, that they have to do what they have to do to provide. We're talking to all of those people. Not to say that those people don't have dreams and aspire to, do bigger things and greater things. It's just, this is what it looks like, Not everybody was blessed to just make it out the gate, We started when we were a lot younger, And, it just doesn't go, that journey doesn't go for everybody. So we are just writing, this is our journey. This is how it's looking for us. And so this is the perspective that we're able to write from, And, everybody in our band, we're like a family, so we all share each other's issues. We're fathers, some are married, so we all share that type of bond that we're all going through together. So it's easier to write about what what we're going through. So, and I think a lot more people can relate to these type of situations and things than a celebrity talking to you about their rich life and the things that they got. It's it's cool to hear about that. Sometimes you want to fantasize that, get material for your vision board, so to speak. I will admit, I listen to it just as much, but sometimes I need to put on some music to hear encouragement. Oh, this dude is in the same position as me. And look at his success. He's finding success as hard for him as it is for me, That's the kind of direction and things we like to talk about, because it's real at the end of the day. Who's speaking for us? Who's speaking for us?
It is real. It's more human. And it feels like it's more that you're being talked to, maybe not necessarily talked down to, if that makes
exactly.
any sense.
But some, yes.
But something else that was mentioned, because you were talking about how you've been plugging away, and we do have to wrap up in a little bit, so we're going to get some last rapid-fire questions out. But yes. Something really cool that happened was, because you've been mentioning plugging away and you're still going strong, and you mentioned Limp Bizkit as one of your inspirations. You guys got to do a collaboration with Fred Durst of Limp Bizkit. What did that moment mean for you guys, and how cool was that?
Oh, man. When I tell you, that right there, that was validation for us. You know what I mean? Like I said, that he was a band, like Limp Bizkit was a band, music that we listened to. You know, I definitely listened to the Red Cap when Limp Bizkit came out. Nicki was fire. Big fan of them. Wes Borland, like their whole energy, everything. Like one of the bands that really motivated me into like thinking that I could be a front man in a rock band. So very influential. And so to see and to be able to work with Fred Durst, like, it's like a dream come true. You know what I'm saying? Like, he hit us up. He sent us a fire emoji on one of our stories, you know, and Najee was like, hey, man, let's just take a chance and shoot him a track and see if he'll do a song with us through the fire emoji. So we were like, oh, wow, Fred Durst, like, from Limp Bizkit, like, is seeing what we're doing. That's awesome. And, like, you know, we were feeling ourselves. So Najee was like, I'm just going to send him a message and send him a track that we were working on at the time and to see if he would want to jump on it. And, you know, like, God did it and was like, hey, got it to him. And he was like, yeah, man, that's fire, you know. And then he put on a verse and the rest is history. Like, it was dope. It's very validating. Like, I've come across some heavy hitters, like some legends. Like, I got to meet Corey Glover from In Living Color when we played a show with them. You know what I mean? We got validation from them, but like to get it from Fred Durst, like, he's on our Mount Rushmore of new metal bands. And so to be able to be in conversation with him and talking to him, like, it was weird, you know? Because, like, I remember being a kid listening to $3 Bill, and now I am talking to him on the phone. And, you know, I mean, it was kind of surreal, you know? But it was definitely a point in our career where we were validated in what we were feeling. Like, yeah, we are good enough. We do have an opportunity. We do have a chance to actually make this into something. You know, somebody we think is great just acknowledge that, you know, what we're doing is really innovative and, you know, really digs what we're doing and supports us. So I would have to say, yeah, it was a very validating moment for us.
And what's so great about your whole story is that you were guys who started doing this as a school project and it grew into this thing. And it's not like you guys became, sorry to say it like this, not you guys became like these big, like, Jews, what we were saying before, the Beyoncés of the world. But you enjoy what you're doing. You're making music. You're touching people. Mm-hmm. You're doing what you love. You're able to support your families. You're able to tell stories and connect with people. And that's what this business is all about.
Yep.
And what's great about the story is that it's for anyone who's listening to this who feels like they have a dream, but they don't necessarily know like how to go about pursuing it. No matter what it is, it could be in music, whatever the case may be, an athlete, however you want to work it. What advice from your journey, although everyone's journey is different, would you give that could help people along on their journey? Because we are all in this together.
Yes, we are. I would say find something that you can do consistently, you know, that is what you're looking for. One of the biggest things that we focus on in Band Nerds is this something that we can continue to do, or is this going to be something that we're going to have to be fake in order to recreate? And we don't want that, you know. We want like you said, authenticity. And so we want to be in a position to where in our careers that we're able to have a long career because the thing that people are supporting or our product that we're putting out is something that we can reproduce at any time because it's something that is natural. It's real. It's something, you know, that is authentic. So don't do anything fake. You know, don't try to follow trends. Do what you can do consistently. It'll make it a lot easier, especially on days where, you know, mental health is a huge thing as well. Like on those days where you're just like, this is not worth it. Like I'm not good, you know, those days where you beat yourself up, you know what I mean? If you're doing stuff that is authentic, it's easier to get through those days, you know what I mean? It's easier to create things that you do naturally. That's what you want to get known for. That's what you want to be pushing, because if you are consistent in what you're doing, eventually it will get noticed, whether good or bad. Like, if you're putting in the work, you're going to get noticed. And what I would hate for someone that is putting in so much work to happen is they're putting in all this effort and to get noticed and get out there, but the things that they're doing is not natural. So then they do get all this attention, and then they can't retain the attention because it's not authentic, it's not natural. So then you can't reproduce it, and then you're going to lose the people's views that you were trying so hard to get. So be authentic, be yourself, do things that come natural to you, and do it consistently. If you do it consistently, all your hard work will pay off. I've never met anybody that worked hard and didn't reap some type of reward from it. So just keep pushing, be consistent. That's the main thing. You have to be consistent. It's not going to happen overnight for everybody.
Brendan, if people want to get in contact or see what Weir Bannards is up to, how can they find out more?
Yes, check us out on all your favorite, you know, social medias. We really are heavy on YouTube and IG. So, and our handles are on YouTube, it's Band Nerds TV on YouTube, and then We Are Band Nerds at IG. So we're usually going live every night, you know what I mean? Holler at us, talk to us, you know. We want to know what we could do better, what music is missing. Like, we have conversations where we can come and play, things of that nature. So come holler at us. We appreciate it. Thank you guys for having me. This has been great.
Thank you so much, Brendan, for joining us. We really appreciate having you on. You've been listening to the One World Radio Show, hosted by 88.7 WRHU Hempstead, 89.5 Bush Radio Cape Town, South Africa, and 88.3 WRCT Pittsburgh, as well as our other partner stations. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you all next week.
And before we go, one more time before we head out, here is We Are Band Nerds on One World Radio.
Reflection, I am second guessing who I appear to be. I'm falling apart. We've been fucked from the start. Handshakes from the face, but I feel your heart. Watch what you start. I was humbled, now I'm jaded, city. Cause I know when we make it, y'all will stay sane. You were right there with me. Dallas observer, never observe me. Push to the side, even though we cut in competition like surgery. Even though we try, Dallas goodbye.
You're right. to One World Radio, a collaboration between 89.5 FM Bush Radio, Cape Town, South Africa, and 88.7 FM WRHU Radio Hofstra University, Hempstead, New York. We thank you for joining us and look forward to seeing you next week as we celebrate the power of radio in our one world. Tot ziens, jylle.
It's just insane. We have the most insane system of health insurance on the planet. We're the only industrialized country, the only developed country that in which the citizens of the country can go bankrupt or lose their homes or die because they don't have coverage or they get their policies canceled.
That's Wendell Potter, and this is Alternative Radio. I'm David Barsamyan. This edition of AR features Wendell Potter on health insurance, an insane system. The murder of United Healthcare's CEO on a Midtown Manhattan street unleashed, the New York Times reported, a torrent of morbid glee from patients and others who say they have had negative experiences with health insurance companies at some of the hardest times of their lives. Some of the comments were, thoughts and deductibles to the family. Another one said, unfortunately, my condolences are out of network. The dark commentary highlighted deep anger over the state of health insurance. Millions simply can't afford it and go without. And many who are on some plan have such inadequate coverage and high deductibles that they can't afford to pay for anything. The answer, Ralph Nader says, is single payer. Everybody in, nobody out. That would bring down prices, but the handful of corporations who monopolize the health insurance industry don't want that. Why? That would cut into their profits. So the insanity continues. Our guest today is Wendell Potter. He was a former Cigna public relations executive, and today he's an outspoken critic of the health insurance industry. This classic from the AR archives is even more relevant today than it was when it was originally recorded over a decade ago. Wendell Potter spoke at Powell's Bookstore in Portland, Oregon.
I think I'll begin by just answering a question that I'm often asked when I am speaking to groups, and that is, why did you do what you did? Why don't more people do what you did? And what led you to do what you decided to do? There was no one thing that led me to do this. It was a culmination of a number of things. I had a wonderful career in the health insurance industry. I've actually had two careers. I was a journalist, and I had a very good career as a journalist. I was a reporter initially in Memphis and Nashville, and then finally in Washington, and I covered Congress and the White House and the Supreme Court for a few years. But I decided to go into PR, first in a political campaign. I was a press secretary for a guy who ran for governor of Tennessee. And from there, my PR career just meandered, and it took me from one place to another, and I eventually wound up working for a big for-profit health insurance company, Humana, based in Louisville, Kentucky. At that time, Humana was largely known as a hospital company, and I was hired to help promote and defend and be a spokesperson for the hospitals that the company owned. After doing that for 4 years, I was recruited to Hartford, Connecticut, to support Cigna's healthcare operations. Cigna at that time was a very large multi-line insurance company. It had property and casualty division, a financial services division, and a reinsurance division, and I was hired to help raise the awareness of Cigna as a health insurance company. Insurers were beginning to catch on to the fact that a lot of money could be made in health insurance. When I worked at Humana, Humana decided to get rid of its hospitals because the executives and shareholders thought that they could make more money if they focused on managed care and health insurance. So they spun the hospitals off to a different company and focused on managed care. And I became the chief spokesperson for Humana and was doing that when I was recruited to Cigna. And Cigna likewise saw that there was a lot of money to be made in health insurance and got rid of its property and casualty division and the other divisions that shareholders felt were not as profitable as health insurance could be. So Aetna did the same thing. Aetna's mix of businesses was very similar to Cigna's during that time, and Aetna did exactly the same thing. It got rid of those other divisions so it could focus on making money on health insurance. When I joined those companies, I thought that managed care was truly a good way to provide finance health care in this country, and I still think that as a concept it's not bad. We have some still very good, I think, solid and reputable players in the managed care space. Some people might disagree, but I think the Kaiser model is one that has worked pretty well for a lot of people, and here in the Pacific Northwest and some other parts of the country, like the northeastern states, where primarily there have been nonprofit organizations that have provided health insurance. What really happened was back about the time that I was working for Humana. Both Humana and Cigna, by the way, are for-profit companies, as you probably know. They're two of seven very large for-profit companies that now dominate the health insurance industry, and I work for two of them. Now, one out of every three Americans is enrolled, if you're insured, in some kind of a benefit plan sponsored by or offered by one of these seven big companies. The for-profit companies began to dominate in the years following the collapse or the failure of the Clinton health care plan. And we saw the conversion of a lot of nonprofit Blue Cross plans to for-profit status. And we saw a consolidation in the industry. And now we have a lot of the Blue Cross plans around the country are owned by this big, gigantic company called WellPoint. So we've seen enormous change in the industry. My point is that initially, the concept of managed care was again something that worked pretty well for a lot of folks. But when these companies saw that they could make a lot of money on managed care, that's when things started getting, our healthcare system took a turn for the significantly for the worse. One of the things that led me to finally decide that I was not in the right business. I was growing increasingly uncomfortable being a spokesman for an industry that was pushing more and more of us into so-called consumer-driven plans. You may have heard the term, but it's a kind of a euphemism for plans that have very high deductibles. And what they are doing is pushing more and more of us into these kinds of plans that require us to pay a lot more money out of our own pockets for care, even if we have insurance. We're paying premiums every month, often as much as we have in the past, but we're getting far less value for it. Often they shrink the benefits or they eliminate benefits, and they make us pay a lot more out of our own pockets. WellPoint has a plan in Maine that is requiring people to pay $30,000 out of their pockets before the insurance will pay a dime. That is the trend, and I was growing increasingly uncomfortable being a spokesman for these kinds of plans. They're extremely profitable for health insurance companies, and that is one reason why these companies have recorded record profits. When I was working for Cigna for 10 years, I handled financial communications. I was the person who explained to reporters who called every time the company announced earnings how the company made its money and whether or not it met Wall Street's expectations. That is the most important thing to these companies, is whether or not you're going to meet Wall Street's expectations for profit. And if you don't, your stock price will go down. And when that happens, if you're an executive, so will your stock options. And you do not want that to happen. So the first priority is always to meet Wall Street's expectations. You're financially invested in this. And the CEOs, for example, at Cigna, the CEO, 90% of his salary is at what they call at risk. And it's determined on whether or not the company performs to Wall Street's satisfaction. And if he doesn't, he doesn't get as much. But if he does, he makes an enormous amount of money, millions and millions of dollars every year. I was worried about these plans, and I did not believe, as I was having to say, that this was the new silver bullet to get more people covered and to provide adequate coverage. What I really was learning was that it is a primary reason why we now have not only 51 million people who are uninsured. We have at least half that many, if not more, 25 million, as estimated by the Commonwealth Fund, who are underinsured. They're paying premiums, but they have plans that are so inadequate that if they do get sick, they're going to be on the hook to pay so much out of their own pockets that people are still losing their jobs or filing bankruptcy, losing their homes because they simply cannot make the out-of-pocket expenses that's required of them. If you consider that the median household income in this country is still just roughly around $50,000, and the average cost of a family health insurance premium that is purchased through the workplace is about $13,500. If you're having to pay premiums and then a lot of money out of your own pocket, that's not very good value in my book. And but the other thing that I didn't really relish and didn't want to be a part of was helping to defeat health care reform. When I worked for Humana and then transitioned to Cigna, it was in 1993, and that was the year that the Clinton health care reform was being debated in Congress. And I played a significant role in helping to defeat that plan. My peers at other companies and I would meet in Washington on a regular basis to develop PR strategies to try to turn people away, to scare people into thinking that the Clinton plan was a government takeover of the healthcare system, would lead to much higher